This is LA Talk Radio's Writer's Block. All our staff's here except for Bobby Jean because she's in a car going someplace. We have an Arthur with us tonight, and his name is Jackie Carr, and he'll be with us in just a moment. We have, of course, Henry Park talking and calling in tonight right away, and this is all going to start right now. So relax, kick back, have another drink, and here we go.
Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Bob Brill. Only on LA Talk Radio.
For those of you who don't know, and that would include Bob Brill, this is the Carmina Burana, and it is, of course, the Trans-Siberian Orchestra.
Yes.
Yes. We have in the studio tonight an author of a great...
It's stuff that I love.
Oh, yeah? Bobby Jean, actually, when she read my book, The Return, she said she sat in a hardback chair with a glass of wine and listened to
this.
Oh, yeah. It's like really evil. Well, we have in the studio tonight a great author. His name is Jackie Carr, and he'll be with us in just a moment. But right now, I think I want to hear a little bit more Carmina Burana.
Evil. 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 Say it with me. Evil.
Evil.
Evil. Evil.
Okay, that's enough. That's enough evil. All right, we're supposed to have Henry, but if Henry's out there and you're listening, Henry, how about getting on your phone and give us a call? But right now, we're going to talk a little bit about Jackie Carr, and he's sitting right here in the studio. You want to say hello, Jackie?
Hey, what's up?
Good. Hey, nothing, man. We're just sitting
Jackie
here.
Jackie Carr, 2 hours.
We're doing our stuff. Give us a little short story of yourself, because okay. Your bio reads like Blackula.
Oh, it does? I'm not even sure.
It's like, okay, the name's Jackie Carr.
Oh, okay. No. That'll work.
Anyway, here we go. And, of course, this of course, will be Henry Park. And we're going to let him in on what's going on right now. Hello, Henry. How are you?
I'm good, Jim. I just got kind of shook up by all that music and was afraid to call in at first.
There's your opening.
Tell you,
hello,
short way to Halloween.
America, all the ships at sea. Let's go to press.
say hello to Jackie Carr, Henry.
Hello, Jackie. How are you doing?
Hey, how you doing? I'm great.
So, what do you got
Very
for us?
Good. Well, I'll tell you, it's great to be back on the air with you. I just got off the phone a few minutes ago with John Fusco. He's a guy who wrote Young Guns 1 and 2.
Okay.
Yeah, to talk about his next film, The Highwayman, which stars Kevin Costner and Woody Harrelson as the two Texas Rangers who came out of retirement to nail Bonnie and Clyde. Now, I love the movie Bonnie and Clyde, but did you know that the family of Frank Hamer, the ranger that Denver Pyle plays, successfully sued Warner Brothers for defamation?
I did not know that.
No, I did not either. A lot of the point of this movie is to set the record straight.
Oh, okay.
It'll be on both Netflix, who, of course, is producing it, and in theaters in March. And you can read more about that in True West.
So I got to ask you, Henry, did they talk about the shootout at the end, and are they going to count bullets?
Mm-hmm.
Are they going to count bullets?
Well, I mean,
are they, because there was like a billion bullets that were shot into the in the real life story. And it's like, I was kind of curious, did he talk about how they're going to do that and whether they're going to go over the top with it?
No, I haven't seen any footage yet. So we're talking about why he wanted to tell the story and the difference between the truth and the fiction. But we didn't get into that kind of specifics. But it's funny. I actually had a friend. He was the father of a girl I went to school with, who was in that town when Bonnie and Clyde were shot up, and waited on the long line like everyone else to walk through the morgue to see the bodies. And he always would say to me, sort of shake his head and say, Henry, she was a pretty little thing. She could have done so much better. Which I think is one of the great understatements of all time.
I think that's probably a truth.
Yeah.
I don't know how she could have been any worse.
Yeah, well, that's true. Well, I think her husband was worse, but anyway, my opinion. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. Anyway, I was just going to say, the last time I was on with you, I was talking about the then imminent release of the Sisters Brothers, starring John C. Reilly, Joaquin Phoenix, and Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yes.
Which I had not been able to see at that time. And I have seen it, and in spite of the awful trailer, which makes it look like a smug and unfunny comedy, it's an extremely fine picture.
Oh,
very
really?
Original story.
Okay.
Beautifully acted and directed.
And that's out now,
and,
right?
That's out right now. I just checked. It's in 7 theaters in the L.A. area, so it's got to be sort of all over. And speaking of how it is shot, you have to see the black powder loads they use throughout the film. Mm-hmm. I don't know what they're doing, but, boy, the effect is great.
Yeah, yeah. Would that be pretty much the same effect that Costner used in Open Range?
Ah, I bet you're right.
I don't know. I'm just
did
asking.
You?
What?
I'm sorry?
Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Has anybody caught any of the first season of Pending Nature on KCET?
Mm-mm. No, I have not.
No, it's a very interesting series. It's made by KCET in conjunction with the Autry Museum. And it's about the unique relationship and deep understanding of American Indians across California for the various plant and animal life that has been native here for so long. And, of course, their ancestors have been here for millennia. And it's a fascinating show. It's returning in April, and I'll have an exclusive clip about it, or rather from it, in the roundup.
Okay.
Cool.
I know. I told you about discussing High Noon on Unspooled, the podcast with film critics Paul Scheer and Amy Nicholson. They're examining each of the AFI's top 100 films list. Mm-hmm. My episode's available now, and I'll have the link in the roundup.
Okay.
We also have part one of my interview with Bobby Crawford, who starred as the child, as a kid on Laramie,
right,
and later went on to be a producer for George Roy Hill on films like The Sting.
Wow.
I've got in the new November True West, they have my article about Woman Walks Ahead, where we examine how much of the history they got right and how much they made up.
A lot.
It's kind of a mix. I think they got the heart of it right. They didn't get a lot of the details, but it's quite a picture, and it's interesting stuff.
Well, if you like Jessica Chastain especially, because I'm a big fan.
Oh, I am too. I'm so glad that they went with her instead of...
Instead of whom? Did we lose you?
We just lost Henry.
Henry! Well, somebody got pissed and cut him off. Anyway, okay.
Oh, there he is. He's back.
Are you back? No, he's not.
He's in and out.
No, nah, okay. Anyway, Jackie Carr, tell us about yourself. Because, I mean, your bio kind of goes up and down and around. And so give us the straight spoof.
Well, I'm an author from Vegas. I live in Vegas now. I started writing really early. It wasn't just something I jumped into. I started writing back in junior high, you know, and that was kind of my thing. I played a lot of games. I wrote a lot of stories. And then as I got older, I kind of just got out of it.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of started doing whatever young men do. And around like 25, 26, I went back to college, you know, and then it just brought me back to writing. Like my brain got back into that whatever gear it was. And I just decided like, hey, man, you wanted to do this back then. Like what happened?
Yeah.
Like this is what you wanted to do. And you still love it. So I started writing again and was seeking it to do it as, you know, something I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. So, you know.
And you're smart. You have not given up your day job.
Well, I feel like I'll get there.
Yeah.
I will. Yeah.
You just mentioned that first thing out of your mouth was you played video games or games.
Yeah.
And, and then you go into the sci-fi genre. Is that where that comes from?
Yeah. I grew up playing a lot of JRPGs, which is Japanese role-playing games for people who don't play games. And games like Final Fantasy and stuff like that, that's kind of what got me into writing books, actually. Because at that time, a lot of people don't understand about games is they became more of a narrative-driven, a lot of dialogue. So these JRPGs had, like, thousands of just dialogue. So I was just pretty much reading a movie the entire time I'm playing this game, that, and the game could last 40, 50 hours even. So I'm just reading these stories and, you know, obviously the visuals, and that just got me into, like, wanting to create, like, realistic characters and, you know, and... You know, that's pretty much what drove me to write.
So did you start with Pokemon and Yu-Gi-Oh and some of those?
I'm too old for that.
Oh, come on, man.
I never liked those. Yeah. I'm just, you know, a little different. a little too old for that.
So all video stuff?
Yeah, yeah. And some films and stuff, too. I like film a lot, too. Like, I love Ridley Scott. I think Alien is still to this day one of the best horror movies ever.
Alien. Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
It's a movie I can't watch.
I can't either. I watch it like this.
I love everything else he does. Yeah.
My girlfriend loves that.
I'm not a big fan of his horror stuff.
Yeah.
I'm more of, you know, Gladiator and some of the other stuff Black Hawk Down and things like that.
But she'll watch stuff, my girlfriend. She'll watch, like, horror movies and stuff, and... Nothing. She just watches it. People getting stabbed up, and she's not scared. But I tried to make her watch Alien. It's, 40-year-old movie now at this point. And it freaked her out.
Yeah, 79 it came out, didn't it?
It freaked her out. Yeah, and she was like, oh, my gosh. She couldn't look at the screen. When the face hugger opened up and it jumped on him, it just...
Now, the reason Jackie's saying she is because his girlfriend, Christina, is sitting right next to him in the studio. And I'm not going to make her say anything. But
she's waiting.
Right now, she's like turned a bright... beat red.
That's just her sweater.
She supports me. She's here to hold my hand.
You know, are you a fan of traditional horror flicks, like the Frankenstein stuff, or is it you like the gore stuff, the slasher stuff?
I like more of the I like the psychological horror because like Alien, it was more of a
like Breakout, things like that.
It's scarier.
Breakout was all right.
The psychological stuff is scarier. I mean, blood and gore is one thing.
Well, that's but it's over with. You know, but
the psychological stuff keeps building.
I'm sure you guys know what they were telling Scott when that film. They're like, nothing happens for the first 45 minutes of this film. We don't want to make this a movie. And he's like, well, when you get to the end, it's going to pay off. And I watched the documentaries on this stuff, and he fought with them over that.
Yeah.
They're like, this movie's boring. And
right.
Just, and then it
well, it's boring
out.
Until they're eating breakfast and a little critter comes out of his chest.
Yeah. That's one of the best scenes, I think, in film. I love that scene.
It's one you never forget. Let's put it that way. You know?
It was John Hurt's introduction to motion pictures.
First and last. That's I love the guy. You never see him again.
It's like In The Godfather, when the horse's head shows up, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Did
they
tell him? You know, did they tell the actor this is going to happen? I read somewhere that they didn't. I don't know what the truth is.
I don't know, but it would be a shock. Having owned horses, it would really be a shock. Especially when it's like a $250,000 racehorse in 1940. Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about your book. Now, you've written two. You've got Martyr.
Martyr.
And then your second book is Martyr Substance, and I have not started that one yet, but I'm going to. I plan on it. Martyr was a phenomenal book.
Oh,
I loved the story. And I tell you what I did like about it. I liked the fact that you never gave any super deluxe delicious description of your characters.
Right.
So virtually they could be played by anybody.
Right.
And I like that. And, I mean, if you're planning on going for a screenplay, you know... You can't have somebody that's 6'5" and broad-shouldered, you know, narrow hip. Nobody gives their lip to Big John.
Big John. Big Bad John.
But, I mean, this way, virtually a dwarf could play, you know, Elliot, if that's what you wanted.
Yeah.
Well, of course, it would be a stretch, but...
Right.
But if you put him on the rack, it really would be a stretch.
I don't believe you just went there. It crossed my mind, but I didn't believe you just went there. Anyway, tell us the premise of the book so our listeners get an idea.
The premise of the book is it's pretty much a story just about, like, for me, sacrifice. You know what I mean? This, you know, it's about Elliot stepping out into a bigger world. And because if you like, he reads a book. Elliot's pretty self-centered. He likes his little life. He likes his family. He doesn't want to go beyond that. And then when he's forced to step outside, you know, to save Leon and do all that stuff, he's still selfish along the way. But he starts seeing things. He starts seeing other people,
right.
And he's like, it can't just be about me and my family.
Right.
You know,
right.
when that's what it's about. It's about just like letting go of and just, you know, being open with everybody.
Right.
Because so people are so family oriented and they don't really care too much about other people. Like the whole thing about Leon and Elliot, they aren't blood.
No.
I did that on purpose.
Right.
But you see the connection between these two people.
Absolutely.
I think you can have that with anyone, you know. I take that to like foster parents and stuff. Like mm-hmm. I feel you can do that too. You don't
sure.
have to necessarily, you know. So that was kind of the thing, and I just wanted to like show that, you know, that kind of human side to just, you know, being more open with everybody.
Right, right. Well, he picked her up and made her family when no one else would.
Yeah,
yeah. So they became family. I mean, he had lost his family, and she had lost her family,
and the Elis, the one that adopted them,
Elis,
he was the one that brought
yes.
him in. I don't know. The book's back in 2014. I forget how much I covered in him mm-hmm. in this book, but I kind of get into how he
a little bit, not a lot.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, the second book kind of opens his character up more too because I wanted people to see where he's coming from
uh-huh.
and why he took in Elliot initially,
right,
and then Liana later on. You know, that kind of how it worked out with them. Is, you know.
I think Elis is kind of like a seer of some sort. You know, he's. Guy who sees, maybe a visionary.
Yeah, he was a noble back in the day. I don't know if that's, I bring that up in the first book, but you kind of learned that, and he came from the other side of the fence.
Well, that you did mention in the book.
Yeah.
But I think Elliot doesn't really get the team playing until about three quarters of the way through the book.
Mm-hmm.
When what was the name of the guy that gets
Caleb?
Killed? Caleb gets killed. And then he really all of a sudden it dawns on him. Wait a minute.
You're talking about Yeah,
when they're on the speeder or whatever they are, and Caleb gets killed.
Yeah, Caleb was the one that kind of seen that. He's seen like this thing in Elliot. Like, you're a very charismatic person.
Yeah,
I see.
You're a leader,
and that's why he brought him along.
Yeah,
and they, you know, I tried to make it interesting where keeping these characters butt heads because Elliot is so to himself,
right?
And Caleb's like, look around you, look at the world. Like, you can't just, you know. And I see this in you. So that's why he dragged him along. So the whole time, Caleb's trying to get him to just. Take on this role of what Caleb sees in him,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's kind of a mentor relationship I have between those two characters in this book.
Yeah, they actually, yeah, you do.
Yeah.
And then you have other characters that have a strong presence.
Yeah, I have a few. Some people said they like Alexa. She was one of Caleb's friends. She was the one with the tattoos.
Yeah. But she never really explored her a lot other than.
I gave a little bit of backstory on her. She's from the castle.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. She's from the other side of the fence.
She got
him
in.
Yeah, pretty much.
And obviously, you know, you've done two in a series. Is there a third? Are you going to continue this series on forward from this point?
Yeah, I'm going to do a third book. I actually started doing a separate series from this. I wanted to. It's called Betwixt the Crowns. I don't know if we're going to get into that one, but I think I'm going to do one of those before I go back to Martyr, and just let Martyr marinate for a while. Because me. I like sitting on my books.
Mm-hmm.
My books are already written in here before I even go write them. You know, obviously the overarching plot, but just character personalities and things. And sometimes I'll have a scene in my head that I just have in there for months and months till I get to that part in the book and I write that scene. And mm-hmm. I already know all the dialogue and everything and mm-hmm. how people feel at that point in time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the dialogue kind of ends up writing itself. I don't know if you ever got that feeling. You're just writing in the... You know,
oh, all the time. Yeah. You know, just finish dialogue.
All you
got
to do is just... You know, A to B, it kind of just, if you know where it's going, it'll naturally go there when you sit down.
Well, once you know your characters and your characters become familiar to you, they pretty much write their own dialogue.
Right, exactly.
You know, and just, all you do is type it.
I used to think I was special when that happened, but I was like, no, that happens
everywhere.
It's like, oh, yeah, you discover stuff. I'm like, is this just me or you guys feel this way?
You can go ahead and see.
Right.
Yeah. a lot of folks say, you know, I have the beginning and I have the end, but it's just that middle part I got to get there from A to Z, you know.
Yeah.
And sometimes you take off into C that goes way the heck over there, and you got to bring D back all the way back.
Right. Well, see, the thing I hate is when people say, "How do I know where the story's going? How do I get there?" It's just like, dude, just sit down, and just start writing. Trust me, it'll steer itself.
Yeah, I mean, like when I'm doing a book, and I'm pretty much Bob's pretty much like me. I know where the book starts, and I know where the book's going to end, and I pretty much know what every chapter is going to be.
Right.
It's just getting there.
Right.
And sometimes, as Bob said, sometimes you wind up going. way far right field, and you don't. And then all of a sudden, you look at it and you go, "Holy crap! How the hell did I get here?" And you think, "Okay, now I have to write him back into the scene again." You know?
Yeah. Right, right.
Don't get rid of this stuff because it's probably some good writing.
Yeah, keep everything.
Yeah.
You know, living in Las Vegas, I have to ask. This is one of the things that was on my mind: is that does Las Vegas to you lend itself to what you are writing about? I mean, as far as characters go, because I mean, a lot of people don't. Obviously, we've been to Vegas ourselves a lot of time, never lived there, but you know, a lot of people think Vegas is some wild, crazy place. It is.
It is.
Wild, crazy things. Yeah. And especially the new shows over the last 10, 15 years as things have changed. Has that been an influence on your characters or anything?
I'm not going to say Vegas has, but yeah, everybody I've ever met in my life comes into my characters, you know, like things I dislike about people. Yeah, it all goes in there.
Of course.
Like every time I'm talking to someone, even you guys, like, you know, I pick things in there. Just, sure. Oh, like, I like the quirks this guy had, or, you know what I mean? Little stuff like that.
Heard that, Jim?
I heard that, Bob.
Yeah, we're in the next book.
Yeah, you got it.
Well, you know what? Sit up next to your microphone so I can only hear. Now everybody can hear you. Diss on me.
Right. That's a compliment, man. Put you in there.
You know, I picked him up in the gutter.
Yeah. Oh, yeah?
I did.
You know, yeah.
You ever think about putting him back?
Well, occasionally.
I gave him a shot of tequila. And that was, oh, yeah. You know, we were together.
Was it the, what was it, the almond tequila?
The almond tequila.
Yeah. I heard about that.
Yeah. Yeah, he was shooting shots. Actually,
she's a big fan of tequila.
Jerry, the person who booked you, my wife, Jerry, she's our booking manager and everything else. She sat here and, like, she was hitting it.
Oh, wow.
She liked it.
What we're doing after we're going to.
She's not really a drinker, but boy, she really liked that almond tequila.
Yeah, it really is good stuff. Yeah.
Smooth.
She makes it close.
It's really smooth.
It's a country song.
Anyway, Martyr is an interesting story in that it takes place. I believe I asked you this question the other night, and you didn't really never really gave me an answer. What you said is not Earth.
Right.
You don't say exactly where it is.
Mm-hmm.
I said a different dimension. You didn't argue with me, but you didn't say yes. So I'm guessing we're on a planet that's like way far away.
Yeah.
That's Earth-like.
Yeah. I kept it vague on purpose, but there's a whole lore behind it, which I'm never really going to touch on in the books themselves.
Okay.
You know, but what it is a planet way out somewhere. It's in the future. It's pretty much mankind has moved on.
Uh-huh.
But the thing about it, we got to certain places and, you know, history kind of just started over there. It wasn't like we kept everything we brought with us.
Uh-huh.
So these people over there have no idea where they came from. That's just where they live.
So they are Earthlings.
Yeah, they are humans, but it's just, okay, it's not Earth and the time is...
You brought in some animals.
Yeah.
Bob, I've never seen animals or read about animals like this before. The ones in the swamp.
Yeah, that's, oh, yeah.
I mean, they're little. The little baby shows up first, and he's a cute little thing. Then they piss him off, and he tries to bite their arm off. And then Mama comes.
Yeah.
And Mama's not so small, and Mama's not so friendly. And
I kind of think you need those kind of little scenes.
Mama kind of wants to eat the boat.
Right. Yeah.
That's your comic relief?
Yeah, with my dry sense of humor, that's close to working.
It wasn't too funny. Well, I will say that they were down there getting their boots sucked off in the mud first.
Whoa.
Well, yeah.
Okay. Well, you know, that brings up, because you talk about other planets and stuff. Were you a fan of NASA, outer space, and just growing up as a kid?
I love Star Trek and Star Wars, actually. Well, maybe not Star Wars as much anymore with everything that's going on with that film. But, I didn't like Star Trek growing up. My dad loved it.
Yeah.
But as when I got older, I'm like, this is freaking awesome. Like, yeah, then, yeah. Then I went back and watched everything Next Generation and all that stuff.
Right.
And that's way early 90s. I was like 10. Right. That's why I didn't like it. It didn't make sense.
Yeah.
But I watched all of them, Deep Space Nine, all of those. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would never write. To me, that's straight science fiction. Mm-hmm. Like I told, we spoke yesterday. I told you, I feel mine is more of sci-fi fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's, like I told him, it's pseudoscience. This is not based on anything, you know. Like I said, The Martian is a sci-fi novel. I'm not a science fiction writer, I don't believe.
Right.
You know, I just dabble. You know, because the difference between that, say, Harry Potter, it's never explained how they have these magical powers. They just do. They're wizards.
Right.
You know what I mean?
They've always had.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The way I like to do things, I just don't want to go that route. I say there is a basis of how this is happening, and that's substance is about what the mantra actually is.
Yeah.
Because I know it's in the first book, but you don't know what it is.
Right.
So in the second book, I thought, I got to open people up to let you know what this stuff is and why Liana's starting to
have these abilities? Why our eyes are glowing yellow now?
Right.
What's going on?
Right.
So I have a kind of explanation for it, loosely based on science. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's the difference.
Well, it's almost like half steampunk and half dystopia.
That's exactly what it is. So, you know, I'm trying to write something different. You know what I mean?
You did.
I feel it's steampunk with cyberpunk. It's like a blend of the two. Because on one part of the world, you have these kind of primitive kind of people mm-hmm. who are still sucking like religious kind of things. And they're like, and then you have the council with these advanced cities and like the freeway, the streets.
Right.
And they're kind of more not in touch with that anymore. They kind of believe in whatever.
Right.
Scientology, I don't know.
Their
own crazy thing.
Yeah.
You know? So that's the median there.
They use antique weapons, bows and arrows. They use swords. And guns that shoot bullets and guns that shoot...
stuff.
Yeah, I mean, well...
pulse shots.
Pulse. And, wow, it's like, holy crap. I mean, this guy's got the arsenal.
Right. Well, they're throwing sticks at, you know, they're fighting with, like, sticks and stuff, and then they got pulse shots. I had to kind of balance it out. So I said, I got to put some projectile-based weapons in here, just like bullets.
Yeah. So, well, they had the pulse cannon, which was really cool.
Yeah, and, you know, I couldn't just say they have these things, so the rebels, they have the stuff too, but how they get it, they actually did the raids and stole some of the technology so they could stand a chance in these fights. They were doing the guerrilla raids, and that's kind of how they find Elliot.
Right.
They bombed that thing not knowing who was on it. They had misinformation, and they actually freed a whole bunch of innocent people.
Right.
Said, oh, shit, come.
Well, I mean, that's where lasers started. They would, lasers were originally going to be a weapon. And
right.
Now it's like fixing eyes and, cutting people in half like James Bond.
That's good.
Hey, works for me. We're going to come back for just a minute. We're going to do a couple of commercials and get those out of the way. And then we'll give out the phone number and just kind of let people call and talk to you if they want to. So hang tough, don't go away, and we'll be right back to you. And you're leaving on vacation. Tickets have been purchased, hotel reservations are confirmed, and mail delivery has been suspended. But what about the dog? Well, all dogs rule day camp and sleepovers. It's the place your dog wants to be when they can't be with you. All Dogs Rule provides your best four-legged friends a place to run and play outside amongst orange trees, grass, and a country setting. Your dog gets to be, well, your dog gets to be a dog. So All Dogs Rule offers additional services including individualized playtime, personal walks, swimming sessions in the creek, and training. Visit All Dogs Rule on the web at alldogsrule.com or give them a call at 805-524-1100. And when your pup returns home, that smile on his face will leave you wondering whose vacation was better and whose vacation was better, Bob?
The dogs.
Damn straight. Okay, here we go. Hi. F. Scott Fitzgerald states, life starts all over again when it gets crisp in the fall. Well, Out West agrees. Time to rework your wardrobe and refresh your attitude. Add a leather or suede jacket, pull on a new pair of stylish boots, slip on a jaunty sweater or wrap, a dash of cinnamon, a splash of cobalt blue, a warm red, a swing of fringe, some hot spiced wine, a hot toddy, a good martini, and three olives. Okay, Out West Shop is just what you need to spice up your life with a touch of the West. Shop online at www.outwestshop.com for the finest fine goods inspired by the West. Enter coupon code WB9 and receive $10 off your order. And call toll-free at 877-340-9378. And that'll give you, that'll get you there live. And there they are, and they're just fun people. And that's Bobby Jean Bell and Jim Bell, and they will actually answer and talk to you in person. You're off.
I was going to say for whom the bell tolls, but
that would be Jim Bell.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he rings the bell for Bobby, and
she comes running.
I know you heard that, Bobby.
Yes.
Okay. And you've typed your last period, you stacked your last chapter, and you sat back in your chair and said to yourself, I'm done. Now, I know you know that. Am I right? Okay, it can't be here. Here we go. Okay, come on. I know you're right, Jackie. Because I did it many times. Nope, not even close. Sure, you finished your manuscript, but what does it take? It takes a whole lot more work to have a completed book. Know what it takes? What does it take, Bob? It takes editing.
And more editing.
and more editing and rewriting.
More rewriting
and formatting, and then proofreading, more rewriting and more editing. And then if you're really lucky, you can devise a cover and you can get some proofs printed, and possibly you'll approve the proofs and they'll go to the printer and you'll have a whole box of 20 books sitting on your table when you get home from work. Well, why not let the folks at Black Dog Publishing and Tuscany Bay Books do that for you? For a very small investment, we can do all of the above for you and get that finished printed book you dreamt about when you first started typing, and help you get some dollars in your pockets as well. Here we are for new writers and that don't have the foggiest idea of what they're doing. So having learned it, we can share and help you get that book of which you can be proud. So give us a call. 805-795-3165. That's Black Dog Publishing and Tuscany Bay Books. Okay, we are back. We have Jackie Carr. We have, of course, Bob Brill, myself, Jim Christina. And if you want to call and talk to Jackie tonight, the number here in the studio, and actually I will answer the phone if I don't hang up, number is 818-602-4929. Again, that number is 818-602-4929. Let's go back to 4 or 5 years ago. You started writing Martyr. You started writing it before that.
Yeah. Oh, your junior high school or something.
Yeah. It started in junior high school, yeah.
Yeah, and then you finished it, and now you've re-released it again.
Yeah.
So now you're on your second printing, or second copy.
Yeah.
Okay, and then you started the second Martyr book when?
Pretty much right after the first one.
Oh, you did? So yeah. Early, it's 2015?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. And you're working on a third book, but it's not a Martyr series.
Yeah, I'm working on a different series.
Yeah.
I'll get back to Martyr, maybe after I'm done with this first book.
Yeah, will this other book be a series as well, or just a standalone book?
It's going to be a series as well. Uh-huh. I got a couple of them in my head already, so it's more dark. It's more of a Game of Thrones meets Castlevania stuff I grew up with.
Oh, okay.
Separated from Martyr a little bit,
Yeah. When you started writing this you mentioned junior high school, and then you put it away and then you came back to it, how much of that original stuff that you wrote ended up in the final product?
Probably the first three chapters, but it had to be reworked. A 14-year-old boy wrote. She actually found it and picked it up. I still had it after all these years.
Really?
And this was, I don't know. And then she kind of looked at it and read a little bit, and she was like, "Look at this." And I read it, and I was like, "Man, I wrote this." Now, granted, it was bad, but reading it,
story, rewriting is easy once you got the story down.
Yeah, and then I think, and that was it, man. It just and I was like, I'm gonna finish this.
Yeah,
and I did, and I kept going. So,
Good for you. I mean, I don't know. I don't know how old you are when you started writing, Bob.
About 5.
Oh, really?
We used to have a short story club at junior high.
Yeah, I used to write jokes when I was about seven.
Bob the Joke Man?
Yeah, I used to write a lot of jokes. Wow. And then in junior high school, elementary school, I read a lot. Junior high school, I read a lot. And then junior high school, I started writing. And then, up through high school. But really seriously got writing after my radio career got started.
Yeah. Okay.
Writing columns and stuff like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was a musician for a lot of years.
You were?
Yeah, I did a lot of lyrics. And
yeah.
I mean, I've got a published, it's at the Library of Congress. It's a compendium. It's 43 separate pieces of poetry that I wrote.
Really?
Yeah.
What kind of music?
Everything.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it's everything. Some of them were made into songs. Some of them weren't. The name of the collection is That's All You Get.
Mm. Yeah, that's what I was doing for a while too. That was like my young. I was in a band for like three, four years in Vegas right before I met her. We were called Push. We started doing pretty good. Yeah. And as soon as we started doing pretty good, things went sour.
Yeah.
So that always happened.
Yeah.
And I was just like, it was like being in a relationship with like three different people.
Oh, exactly. At the same time.
And I was just like, I'm not gonna do this anymore. And I was a lead singer, and it was like rock. You guys ever heard of like Tool? Bands like that. They formed here. That's one of my favorite bands. Like, we were kind of heavy like that. But I called this progressive groove metal.
Yeah.
Because I like to sing. These guys up there. Rah! I don't do all that. Yeah. So it's like, it was good. But it's just like after it and we brought, I'm like, I can't start all over.
Yeah.
And then I was like back to school a year later, back to writing.
Well, you know, the funny thing about bands, this is a little takeoff from your writing part, but the funny thing about bands is that, you know, for the first couple of years, everybody's like really stoked and they're really doing well and the band's doing well. And then all of a sudden somebody gets a wild hair up their butt and all of a sudden somebody wants to go. We used to do acoustic vocal.
Right.
3-4 part harmonies, you know, 2- and 3-part guitar harmonies, bass. Mm-hmm. And it was great. We used to pack the houses. And then my lead singer, David Audie, and David, if you're listening, it's you, and I knew you just had a birthday. He decided he wanted to do, like, country rock.
Right.
No.
It's like, ah, he was trying to get into the mainstream.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, he was.
Big bucks.
he goes, well, you know, it's really popular. Yeah, well, so are we.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the thing is, you know, I understand both sides of that.
Me too.
I mean, I understand that side, but, you know, people get bored.
Right.
You know?
That's it.
And I know even writing certain things, I've written blogs. Like, the blog I'm writing right now, my baseball blog, Baseball in the 1960s, I love. And it's fascinating. Uh-huh. And it's the most heavy-duty thing as far as response I've gotten of, like, 4,000 views a month and stuff like that. It's really going good. Even got a sponsor. But, you know, at some point, I'm wondering, am I going to get bored with it? You know, because, you know, and I don't think I will, but I've gotten bored with other blogs and other columns I've written, you know, and it's like, okay, how do I get into this? Now I got to get out of this, you know? Right. So I totally understand that side of it, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I mean, you know, but I think that happens with all bands eventually.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it happened with the Beatles. It happened with everybody, all the big bands. I mean, they just went away.
Except the Stones.
Yeah,
they're
just
still
going. Well, on Journey, they went to the Philippines and got a new singer or something.
Yeah.
Just like Steve Perry.
The
so
Philippines, oh, yeah. Dang. Wow.
So, you know.
We know, at the Canyon Club, there's always a Canyon Club out here. In
Aurora.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's always, you know, bands that are coming. And the Guess Who's coming, one of my favorite bands of all time. But, like, there's one person from the Guess Who.
Yeah. Right. That happened to get the rights to the band's name.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I get that. Well, actually, we saw America there.
Guns N' Roses
Jr. We've seen a lot of people at the Canyon Club, yeah. Back to your writing. When you were sitting down to write, what's your favorite time to write?
Oh, right when I get up. Morning time, man.
Yeah.
It's quiet. You know, just right in front of the computer before you start doing everything.
Yeah.
Would that be the same if you weren't in Vegas as if you were someplace else? And the reason I ask that is Vegas is beautiful in the morning. That's the reason.
It's gorgeous.
Oh,
yeah.
It is?
Yeah, it's one of the most beautiful places, I think.
This place is really sunny. I've been driving into the sun all day. Like, wherever we were just turning, and the sun was just right there. I'm like, how
does this happen? Yeah.
Like, this is the worst thing ever.
Well, when you go home, don't leave in the morning because you're going to be driving into it again.
Exactly.
No, I'm not sure. I don't know. But I love, because I get up for work at 2 a.m., you know. So even on the weekends, I'm up at 5 a.m., and that's sleeping in.
Yeah.
So I'm up, and that's the first thing I do is just sit down here and get this out before you don't do it.
Yeah.
You know, and then I'll spend like, oh, man, just like an hour or two maybe. You know, and sometimes it's only 4 or 5 paragraphs, but I'm like, that's a good 4 or 5 paragraphs.
That's exactly right.
I'm not the kind of writer that goes backwards. You know, once I write, because it might take me a while. But once it's there, whatever I was trying to convey and those bars or whatever, they're there. And I'm like, that's good. I want to keep it. Mm-hmm. I'm not like, you know, delete, delete, delete. I don't do that. You know?
Now, for new writers that are out there that are listening to the show, and I know we got a bunch of them, tell me, I do this.
Mm-hmm.
I know when I finish a paragraph or maybe a page or even a chapter, I'll move on to another chapter. And then all of a sudden, I'll start nagging. Something's nagging here. And I go, you know what? Something was not right. Something did not work correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And I let it go, and I can't do that. So back I go. I did that today. Back I go, and I find the paragraph that bothers me. And it could just be a paragraph. One paragraph.
Mm-hmm.
And you fix it, and then you go, okay, I'm good. Then you go to the next chapter.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, you know, I always know when something isn't just right. And do you have that feeling?
I think I'm the opposite. Like I said, I don't move on until I feel it's right.
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, I won't even continue forward. Okay. It's just like, and people say, you know, I don't hit walls. I don't understand the concept of writer's block. I really don't.
Oh, we're going to ask you that question, too.
I was going to say, you took the words out of Jim's mouth.
Because me, like, when I'm at work, the gears won't stop turning.
Yeah.
They don't.
Yeah.
Like, so what I do is I use that to my advantage. I think about my books all day. And that's how I have these scenes and stuff. And it's like, oh, I'm going to. Now I know. Now I can go write. Sometimes I won't write for like a week or two because I'm doing that.
Sure.
So when I finally go sit down, I can actually put something on the paper.
Sure.
You know, so like I said, I don't understand the concept of that because it just constantly is moving.
Uh-huh.
So whatever you're doing, You know, if you don't know where it goes, just let your mind go, and it'll probably reel itself back in. Like, oh, okay. You know, don't sit down and say, let me figure this out now.
Yeah.
Just figure it out.
Yeah. So what is the day job?
I work for the Miller, the beer company out in Vegas.
Okay.
I drive trucks.
Cool. Yeah. Hey, believe me, I'm glad you said that, because my best ideas come when I'm driving.
Right.
You know, sometimes it's distracted driving. But, you know, seriously, when I'm driving down the road, I'm sitting there, and I'll see a scene. I'll see something off the side of the road. I'll say, okay, I got a scene there. And I'll start, as I'm driving, I'm building a movie around it, or or a book or something. And I just have to get my phone out and start recording into it just what I saw, and then just, you know, move on. But, you know, I do the same thing. And I think, I don't know if a lot of people do that, but I think quite a bit do. And because it's such a relaxing yet time when your brain just kind of goes, because you have to watch everything around you, and those things start being, you know, coming into your brain, right, and start formulating ideas. So it's cool that you mentioned that. I'm glad you did.
Yeah,
I just I think you'll find when you're no longer working and writing is your job.
Glad you said it like that.
That it will be, well, you're no longer working for someone else,
right,
and writing is now your job, and you're sitting at your typewriter or your computer, and
dilly.
When you're going to hit writer's block.
It's like, now I got to pay the bills with this.
Yeah, that's right.
And you know what? That's exactly right.
Right.
You know, writers don't think about that. You know, they got so much going through their head. You know, am I going to finish this? I'm on a deadline. Oh my God, I'm stuck.
A lot of writers I meet don't multitask like you guys. They write books, novels, and that's it.
Yeah.
I don't really want to go that route. I think books and novels are what I go do in my free time.
Yeah.
But I don't mind having a day-to-day writer's job. Like, I don't mind getting into film and television.
Yeah.
Because I can do that, too. And plus, books are more, to me, interpersonal. Like, that's my brain. That's my voice. I don't feel like I could do that with anyone else.
Yeah.
But say if we're working on a project for, like, a television program, and you got a room full of writers.
Sure.
Four or five guys. And all we got to do is come up with a great narrative and just, you know, just character and characters and stuff like that. Not just so much of, you know the how interpersonal writing is. When you read it, it's like, when you read Stephen King, that's Stephen King. That's his mind, you know, and the way that he does things.
We need to interview Stephen King.
Oh, I think we can get him tonight if we want to, right? You just let him
probably just go.
He's probably here.
Could be.
He's in the back.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that, because I had an agent tell me once that if you're a novelist, you can't be a screenwriter, and if you're a screenwriter, you can't be a novelist. I disagree with that totally.
Yeah.
I mean, it just, you know, the stories, I mean, it's a different process. It's a completely different process.
Right.
You're talking, you know, what you may have had in 20 years in a book done in 2 hours in a movie, and it's video and watching things and not telling things and not being too descriptive and letting, you know, but it is a different process.
Right.
But it doesn't mean you can't do it, you know, and I think there are many that do.
Right. I had this notion that I wanted my books to be a certain, you know, my book you picked up out there is like 280 pages or something. I look at that, I get a little jealous, because my books never seem to hit that length, you know. So it's like, I kind of look at my work as lean pieces of meat, you know, just cut off all the stuff. I usually hit around 60, 70K, and that's it on the words. And I want it to be longer, but that's the story.
But that's no normal. That's a normal length of a book, between 40 and 60,000 anymore. It used to be like 100,000 words.
But into the
people
80s,
don't, you know, have the time now to sit and read War and Peace.
Right.
And they're not going to.
Right.
So if you want to keep somebody's attention in a book, it's got to be where they can get it done in a couple days.
Yeah. That is something that we talked about on Katie's show, The Writer's Edge, about, a lady named Christy Shreddis. She does her own, like, podcasting.
Right.
We were talking about, like, audience attention spans and how they're different. And she found it interesting that I was talking about, like, I don't think you can write like Stephen King back in the day anymore, because it won't hold people's attention.
No.
You know what I'm saying? Like, they don't want to have a whole page of, like, your description of the snow.
Right.
It may be beautiful and great, but no one wants to really read that anymore. You got to kind of, and that's what I do. I felt that immediately when I first started writing. Like, get the story in there, have the character development all within this nice lean piece of meat, and serve that up. You know, don't try to go out and add all this fluff and filler.
Yeah, and that's, and that, and that's a lot of the times, I mean, that's what you get. You're exactly right. A whole page to describe a snowflake.
You
know, and when most of the people go, who cares?
Right.
And, you know, really.
And everything's going that way. I mean, just in this last few days, one of the networks announced, not the broadcast networks, one of the other networks, announced that Matt Damon's just signed on, because they're going into 10-minute series. shows that are just 10 minutes. They're going to produce hundreds of them at a time, and that's going to be what they're going to be showing on their streaming networks and their cable networks. And it's where everything's going, because nobody's attention span, because where we at with the internet and everything, where we're at with the internet and everything, is longer anymore. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you and I were growing up going to movies, we saw two films,
right, and a
cartoon,
short.
And a short,
right,
and maybe something else,
right.
You know, today, if a person, including me, if you go to a movie, if it's 2 hours, that's long enough. You're ready to get up and get your butt out of that seat and leave.
Once the popcorn's gone,
unless
I'm ready
it's
to
the
go.
Avengers, then we'll stay.
Yeah,
the second movie was like Thanos. The character was written so beautifully. I'm like, that's a villain, man. Like, he was actually the hero. If you look at it, you know, if you really watched the movie, that was a great movie. Over 2 hours, I believe.
Well, we're going to be running out of time here pretty quick. So, what kind of advice or any good words do you have to any aspiring writers out there? Do you got anything to throw into their pool of confusion?
I'm just as confused as they are. I'm not.
Well, that's good.
But no, just you're going to write, man. Just sit down and write. I see a lot of people on some of these sites on social media, like author sites, and they're asking everybody questions about how do I do. And people can't answer these questions for you. How do I write this? How do I come up with great characters? What kind of question is that?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, we cannot do that for you. You got to sit down and just write. And don't worry about is it good or not. You got to write what you feel and then put it out there. That's what we do. We create the work, we put it out there, and you let people nitpick it.
Right.
And digest and whatever they're going to do with it.
Right.
You know, write what you feel and write right. what you can write. Right. You know, don't ask too many questions. Just do it.
Right. We had an author in here when Richard Paulinelli was our co-host a while back, and Peggy Wheeler, nice lady. Love Peggy. I mean, she writes a really good book, The Daughter of the Raven, and some really good stuff. But she follows her reviews, and I just, don't do that.
Yeah, that's
because it just makes you depressed if you get a bad one. And that happens.
Well, it's, you know, critics, what do they say about critics?
Well, everybody is one. Yeah. They're like assholes. Everybody.
Yeah, well, it's like, you know, a friend of mine once said, everybody, when you're doing a screenplay, everybody wants to rewrite your third act. You know, they'll sit and see your short, or they'll sit and see your movie, and it's like, they all want to rewrite the third act. And that's where the meat is, you know?
Yeah, right.
But they're the payoff anyway, so.
I don't believe in paying a whole lot of attention to reviews. Nice reviews are fine. Mm-hmm. But you know, if you get a bad one, you get a bad one. Not everybody's going to like your work,
right?
And it's just the way it is. You know, right. If some yokel gets a hold of your book that doesn't like it, so what? You know, look at the people that did like it,
right?
Usually, way outshine the people that didn't like it. So,
and they're the people that paid the money for it.
And they're the people right. that paid the money. The guy that didn't like it probably had it given to him.
Yeah.
Right. They don't like this.
Or he was the guy, that group of 326 people that only get your books on Amazon when on the free day.
Yeah, that guy. You know, I know one of those guys.
My thing was when people buy something, it gives it value to them. It's like, I bought this, so it's mine. You know, so they kind of like it more because they had to pay for it. You give people something for free, they're like, yeah, it's okay.
You read a book like yours, you read a book like Lancer, the series Lancer, or some of my books. I mean, there are stories that
Jonah Blue.
They're not good. Jonah Blue's a great book that are not going to go away. Mm-hmm. I mean, those are stories that are going to stay in your head. And that's why talking about Martyr is such a great story, because it stayed in my head.
Yes. So, right. That's great.
It will always be there. Let people know where they can get a hold of you.
Well, I'm on social media, but you can start at JackieCarrBooks.com. That's my name. And a car with two R's, books with an S.com. And then all my social media links are there. And also you can preview all my books and get in touch with me if you so choose.
And email address?
JCarr. 702@gmail.com.
Okay. And your website again is JackieCarr.com.
JackieCarrBooks.com.
Books.com. Okay. I actually went to your website.
Yeah. Did you like it?
Yeah.
We did it ourselves.
It's real brief, but yeah. It's good.
Well, it should evolve over time.
Well, yeah, of course it will. Of course it will. And the name of the book is Martyr, and the other book is, Martyr Substance.
Yes.
And then the third book that you're writing now is?
It'll be called Martyr to the Unforgiven.
Okay, and both the Martyr books are available on Amazon, because I went and found them there. They're available on ebook. And I think it's only ebook.
Ebook for now, yeah. I'm looking to get paperbacks really soon. Because I did reads back in the day. I went to Boys and Girls Clubs and donated some books. Mm-hmm. I went to my junior high school where I wrote my book.
Cool. Oh,
that's great.
And I did a showcase there for the kids, and it was really cool. I gave out some free copies, and just like it's kind of a motivational speaking thing, mm-hmm. too. And I'm like, hey, guys, mm-hmm. I used to go to this school, and I wrote this book. And, you know, I need to get my hard copy so I can get back to doing that, because that was really fun. That's more of my marketing thing.
Yeah.
I'm not so much a social media guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I'd rather go sit in front of a crowd and talk, and I read a couple
chapters. That's the way to do it. Bob will tell you.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody does that.
No. Well,
I know all the other authors, I'm like, you don't do that.
See,
like,
shameless
no.
self-promotion is something that writers don't want to do.
Right.
Because they don't know how.
Right.
Anyway, you're going to have to cut it. Jackie, thank you so much for coming out
thank
from Las Vegas.
To talk.
Good enjoy.
And to be sitting here in our little studio. And,
yeah, it's great, man. Not have to worry about
taking
the phone breaking
the heaps
up or anything.
Of abuse we've thrown at him, and he has just smiled and laughed his way through it. Christina, thank you for joining him. Next week, we have Ruth Ramsey. She is a returning author of her book, Candle of Dreams. I've just started it. That seems like a pretty good story.
I was excited to talk to her because she grew up in the small town where I had one of my early radio jobs.
That's what you were saying
yeah.
earlier. Yeah. So
yeah.
It'll be fun to ask her
yeah.
about that.
Well,
yeah.
Wanted, yeah.
And then we also have coming back one of your favorites, Johnny D. Boggs.
Oh, cool. So, Johnny's coming, huh?
Johnny, I have this real quick story. at the Cowboy Festival this year in April, poor Johnny was leaving a
where
restaurant.
Where we shared almond tequila.
We did. And Johnny was leaving this restaurant, and a guy came up. He was drunk. And he said, are you Stephen King? And Johnny said, no. And he says, I'm Johnny Boggs. And he goes, I don't know who that is, but you should. I think you're Stephen King. So Johnny made a big mistake of coming in the next morning and telling me about this. Well, I hired a kid about mid-morning to come over, and I paid him $10 to go over and ask Johnny if he was Stephen King. And his response, I have it on video, his response was phenomenal, and we are going to bust him about that. He's on the air with us. But Johnny D. Boggs, he'll be here, and I think in January. And again, Jackie, thank you so much for coming in.
You guys.
Pleasure meeting you.
Pleasure, dude.
Christina, nice having you. For Jim, Christina, Bob Brill, and the ever, ever absent Bobby Jean Bell.
She's going to be sorry about that one.
We are out of here.